Please rise. The Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Connolly, Chief Judge Siegel, Judge Riley, the Honorable Francis J. Connolly presiding.
Thank you. Let's all be seated. Welcome to the Court of Appeals. We welcome our student interns. We hope you find it exciting. Our first case this morning is A23-1304. State of Minnesota versus, I hope I pronounced this right, Chaz Edwin Johnson. As all parties are aware, counsel for the appellant will have 15 minutes for your argument in chief. Counsel for the respondent will have 15 minutes. And finally, counsel for the appellant will have 5 minutes for rebuttal. So whenever you're ready, just approach the microphone. You can adjust the podium to your height, up and down, and just begin by telling us who you are in a loud, clear voice, please.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Mark Kelly, and I'm representing the appellant, Mr. Chaz Johnson. There's two issues before this court upon which Mr. Johnson is requesting that this court reverse his conviction for possession of controlled substance, specifically a THC vape, and the conviction for fifth-degree controlled substance crime. Sentenced as a felony. The first reason that we are asking this court to reverse the district court order denying our motion to suppress the evidence obtained and included in the state's probable cause statement is that under the totality of the circumstances, the objective facts relayed to the district court by law enforcement failed to establish justification for the traffic stop in question. The record below indicates that there was no other reason for the traffic stop, no traffic violations. It was merely observations made by law enforcement that they believed criminal activity was afoot, namely a drug transaction.
Can I ask you, in the district court order, are there any of the facts that you think the judge got wrong?
This court reviews, of course, clear and convincing, assuming that the district court, clearly erroneous standard for reversal of findings of fact. One thing I'll note for this court is the district court order didn't have specific bullet point findings of fact that you find in some district court orders. What the district court did was write an order denying the motion and then a memorandum that seemed to have some findings of fact. The only clearly erroneous, perhaps, that jumped out at me was that on page 5 of the district court order, the district court mentioned justification of furtive gestures. On the omnibus hearing transcript, pages 27 and 28, I specifically asked Investigator Wood.
I'm going to pause you for a minute. I'm just looking at page 5. Is it the last paragraph that you're referring to?
It is. The last line on page 5, Your Honor. So it would be that there was some furtive gestures.
I see. Yeah, thank you.
And then the omnibus hearing transcript on pages, the bottom of 27, top of 28, I specifically asked Investigator Woods, can we agree you observed no furtive gestures? And he agreed with that and then kind of summarized it as something about I couldn't see their hands.
Okay.
Now, there's some law enforcement officers in the field are permitted, authorized under Sokolov and Arvizu U.S. Supreme Court cases to use their experience to formalize particularized objective indications that they're noticing there might be criminal activity afoot. I would refer to, the comments of Justice Stevens during oral argument on Sokolov, as this was an experienced investigator in the field, Investigator Woods, and that was noted by the court, that Justice Stevens pointed out, even a man who has been in the business for 30 years can't get away with a vehicle stop on pure hunches. And even though Investigator Woods was experienced, we're submitting to this court that the record establishes pure hunches.
I was going to ask you this question too. In your memorandum in support of the motion to dismiss, you write, Johnson offered law enforcement a vape with THC oil. And in that memo to the court, you argue that he did not consent to the search of the vehicle and that the law enforcement lacked a reasonable articulable suspicion for both the stop and the expansion. In your brief to this court, you seem to argue that the circumstances surrounding the stop rendered his decision to hand over the vape with the oil in it involuntary. But I don't know that you made that argument to the district court.
So it's clear, I did argue to the district, so that's clear, my memorandum to the district court did involve the search of the vehicle. At that time, some methamphetamine was found. There was, that was the probable cause, was the product of, in part, him handing the vape to the officer. The district court at the 2601 sub 4 stipulated facts court trial found my client not guilty of what was found in the car. So therefore, the search of the car is not at issue before this court because no evidence was netted in the search of the car. Simply, the conviction is based upon the handing of the vape. So I think that you are correct that at one point in time, I was making an additional argument, or supplemental argument, if you will. It was, I believe that I clearly argued the expansion of that stop was inappropriate. And under Burbach and under Fort, that my client testified about how many times he was asked for consent to search before he handed over that vape. So it's a unique part of this case. The other unique part of this record that I'll point out to this court for your benefit is that Investigator Wood radios ahead to Investigator Vi, who's also sitting nearby, and tells Investigator Vi to stop the motor vehicle as it's traveling eastbound out of town for the reasons that he stated they observed what he believed was potentially some kind of criminal activity in the parking lot. Investigator Wood never goes to the scene. There are unmarked squad cars. There's no body cams. There's no squad cams.
The scene of the stop. I'm following.
Sorry. Yes. So Investigator Wood testifies on direct and cross that he wasn't there for any of the interaction on the road. And Investigator Vi never testifies. The only person to offer evidence about that interaction is my client. And he talks about how they get his license, they get his insurance. They of note, that there's no evidence in the district court record that when they approach that car, there's any impairment of the driver, there's any odor of drugs, there's any paraphernalia in plain view, no furtive gestures. There's nothing to justify other than investigating this drug stop. What they say to him is, why are you stopping me? He testifies that the officer Vi said, because you met somebody back in the parking lot. And he tells them clearly, number one, I didn't meet anyone. Respondent's brief characterizes that as a lie.
He said he didn't meet anyone. Is that his testimony?
Correct.
And yet the woman got into his car and they drove away. Now, how do you reconcile those two facts?
So the testimony goes on.
That sounds like a lie to me.
Correct. The it's a misunderstanding that is then explained. My client testified that what we did was her car was broken down. She pulled in. I came in behind her. She walked up to me and said, the car's breaking down. Therefore, you know, we're going to leave it here. I got to go in and talk to them because it says you can't park here overnight. So she goes in, she shops, he testifies for 15 minutes. That's kind of consistent with everything else.
Did he testify, was there evidence in the record that he had known her prior to this?
Absolutely. Okay. He said that they were together. He testified they were together at noon to pick up this car that was being sold or gifted to them. It was very cheap. The reason why it was so cheap was it hardly made it home, right? So then they decide to leave it because they've got plans. So he explains all of this to Investigator Vi. In other words, we've got collective knowledge to establish reasonable suspicion or probable cause by law enforcement. But we should also have collective knowledge to then bring that temperature down once it's explained. He didn't meet anyone there. He was with her all day. So he was confused by the question. Then he explained what they were doing. And Investigator Vi, at that point in time, should realize the game is over. This is not a drug deal.
Did he provide an explanation for why, when they both got back into the car, they reclined the seats and he kept sort of putting his head up to look around?
I would submit that it's clear from Investigator Wood that he was sitting in a parking stall. This is in the record, to the east of the store. There's a single lane along Highway 61. Then there's two lanes to the southwest of the entrance, and the entrance to the store is on the southwest. So when I cross-examine him, all of this area is visible to the front door. One of the things that he says initially that there's something about it being secluded. And I specifically point out in the record, sometimes a picture's worth a thousand words, and I wished I would have introduced a picture. But through my thousand words on cross-examination, it clearly identified this as being wide open, only a couple lanes for parking, and people are coming and going. This is 4 o'clock on a weekday afternoon. It is the busiest intersection in Hastings. This is people, according to Investigator Woods, people were coming and going in and out. So what he is able to see is very limited. And as far as the reclining is concerned, once again, they're in that vehicle for a couple minutes. If you're in a parking stall and you're going to back up, you better look around before you do. Is that what he sees? People looking around before they back up? Does he think that's suspicious? This is just when you don't see any drugs.
I agree with you. You know, I mean, it's good driving to look around, particularly if you're a new, inexperienced driver in a parking lot before you back out and look around. However, I rarely recline my seat backwards all the way when I back out of a parking lot.
And I don't think that was the record. I believe that.
So you're saying that they tipped that in the you're saying that finding is clearly erroneous. Because that's a big deal for me.
Yeah, the finding is Agent Wood observed the seats, and I remember this from the transcript, in the vehicle reclined back to the point where he could no longer see the occupants of the vehicle, but occasionally would see defendant's head pop up and look around.
That is the way he characterized it, with people coming and going. I don't know how many people ingest drugs while people are parking next to them, walking by the car in a parking lot that has busy people, you know, patrons coming and going with only a few rows of cars from the entrance of a store. I mean, to originally keep in mind that this officer testified that they parked in a secluded area and there's nothing secluded about it. I pointed that out on cross. But that's, once again, that behavior in and of itself, if that's where the Fourth Amendment is drawn, if that's where people get pulled over because they get together with their girlfriend or their significant other and they're sitting in the car for a while and they're talking before they leave about what they're doing next. We're going to leave the car. We're going to risk getting it home and then having it break down. I mean, this is just normal everyday activity. And when you don't see cash trade hands, when you don't see any cellophane bags, I cross-examined him. How many people do a drug deal and then leave together? Well, they might drive around the block and come back to the same spot and then separate. But that's not what these people did. They were leaving town, and they were pulled over several blocks from this area. And then understanding that if that's how low this hurdle is, because it is only reasonable suspicion, all of that is dispelled to Officer Vi. All of it is dispelled. The explanation is given. There's no impairment. There's more justification for the expansion of a routine traffic stop in Wiegand, where the drivers are nervous. I mean, there's not even nervousness on the part of these people. So all of that is dispelled.
So what are you saying is the expansion? So the purpose, the reason for the stop, if we find that there was a reasonable articulable suspicion, was suspicion of drug activity. So then asking questions about drugs, was that an expansion?
It was. So under Burbach, where they actually get a tip from the staff, mm-hmm. the sergeant, you know, the staff at the staff meeting, this car is involved in drug activity. They stop Burbach's car for going, 55 and a 35 or something? And the driver, they can smell the alcohol. So they do the BAC and it comes up zeros. And then they ask for consent to search. And the Minnesota Supreme Court said, you can't even ask for consent to search. So that's the argument that I'm making, is that expansion of the traffic stop is the request for the consent to search. My client says, no, you cannot search. But then they keep pressing him. After that, they keep pressing him. So it's an expansion. And clearly the U.S. Supreme Court says scope and duration of a routine traffic stop.
And he was convicted, though, of a marijuana-infused waxy substance found in the center console of the car, correct?
Yes.
Not the vape pen.
No, I believe he was...
I just looked at the opinion again because I was confused when you said he was convicted of possession of the vape pen.
I have to defer to the record.
Okay.
I apologize.
All right. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Kelly. You will have 5 minutes for rebuttal. We'll now hear from counsel for the respondent, please.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Jessica Beerworth and I represent the respondent, Dakota County. Reasonable articulable suspicion, as this court has already touched on, is not a high standard. It is not one piece of what an officer sees, but rather it is all of the pieces that the officer sees. And in this particular case, Investigator Wood was able to meet his burden when he was put to the test before the district court and cross-examined, and he successfully and clearly indicated his reasonable articulable suspicion. It is not one item. It is not just the fact that the vehicle was, according to him, parked away from all of those people that were going back and forth. It was off to the side. That was, as you may recall, what caused him to notice the vehicle and to see that that vehicle was not behaving like all the other vehicles in that parking lot. And then he was very able to indicate during his testimony that no, they didn't arrive together. She arrived after he arrived because Investigator Wood had already had the opportunity to sit and observe some of the oddities of that vehicle and the behaviors. Then the female arrives in the other vehicle. The other activity, as the court has already touched on, including something that was hand-to-hand. There was some exchange of something. And then, as the court has already pointed out, once the other party arrived back, the reclining of the seats. That was a clear piece for Investigator Wood that also added to the already existing reasonable articulable suspicion. As Investigator Wood testified, it's also not uncommon for then parties during a transaction to leave and come back at some point. All of those things aligned. Investigator Wood was then able to share that information with Agent Vi. So at this point, I submit to the court that the reasonable articulable suspicion for the stop was satisfied. The district court's order captured that based upon the testimony that this court has seen in that transcript. Moving next to the stop of the vehicle. As the court knows, that is an area where that collective knowledge is permissible, and Agent Vi now knows what has been observed and what the collective is looking out for. What is going to happen? Why are we stopping this vehicle?
But the state chose not to put Officer Vi or Agent Vi on the stand, though, at the omnibus. So all there is Officer Woods, who is not there, and the defendant, who did testify and said, look, they kept asking me questions. I told them no. I didn't feel like I had a choice. I mean, it's only then that he turns over the vape pen. So what's the state's response to that and how we deal with that part of the case?
Thank you, Your Honor. I would say that there is some knowledge back from Agent Vi that Agent Wood does testify to. Though he is not at the scene, he is saying, here's the information I received back from Agent Vi. Even believing the defendant's account, just for the sake of argument for those purposes, the expansion of the stop piece is still available to the officers. He has not consented. The officers didn't need his consent at that point once he had turned over the vape, establishing the probable cause for the search of the vehicle. I understand and I agree with the court that to then argue that there was some sort of consent or coercion doesn't make sense, since that also did not come out in the district court.
Are we in plain error territory then, or? Because it wasn't asserted before the district court? I mean, if we agree, I mean, it doesn't appear that this was asserted before the district court. What's the proper course for us?
Your Honor, I think that we're still in the area of clear error and the standards associated with that, because the court's factual findings, the rulings of the district court are still supported by the findings in the record, and that's what the court's considering. So for those reasons, I believe that there is still a sufficient basis for the expansion of that stop. I understand in terms of the defendant providing a different set of facts or different set of information, to the extent that the court finds it valuable, I would also remind the court that the appellant was also impeached at the end of his testimony, even before the district court. So that, Your Honor, as well as the fact that I'm going to go back to what we called out as a lie, which I think the court may agree with, concerning his behavior, adding to the expansion of that stop. What the law is asking us to do is look at what the reasonable articulable suspicion is. What does the officer see? And then when we get to the stop, what does the law enforcement have available to them? I don't think, Your Honor, that the law is, can the appellant come in and explain away all of his behavior? That is not the standard. If that were the standard, that would make, frankly, the execution of any law enforcement activities or the ability to render anyone engaging in criminal activity incredibly difficult. That's not the standard.
Ms. Spearworth, does the record indicate, so they're asking him Mr. Johnson if they can search his car? He says no. And then does the record indicate then how it evolved that he decides to give them the tape with the THC oil? I mean, what are the facts surrounding that? I mean, is it like, okay, I'm sick of talking to you people, here's the tape?
Your Honor, frankly, the only testimony from that is specifically from the appellant, where he does indicate that they asked him if he had anything and told him, well, we'll maybe cut you, I'm paraphrasing a little bit, we're going to cut you loose if you're going to agree with us, we'll just do X, Y, and Z. And then he decides to turn it over. I submit to the court that was an attempt to, well, I'll give them something and then maybe they'll go away and they won't get to the car. But that's not what happened. So, Your Honors, I believe that the district court's order is square with the law, and that the officer's testimony did establish reasonable articulable suspicion, and that the search of the vehicle was also supported. I'm asking that this court affirm all of the district court's orders. Absent any further questions from this court, I will rely on my brief and I will be seated.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Ms. Beerworth. Mr. Kelly, you'll have the last word, sir.
Going back through the record, I did note that my client was convicted of what was found in the center console. I did raise in my memorandum of law the expansion of the routine, and my motion, the expansion of the routine traffic stop, or expansion of the traffic stop in this case, as well as in my memo raising Burbach and challenging the warrantless search of the vehicle as a result of what was then probable cause argued by the state that the pen that he handed to officers containing the THC oil gave them probable cause then to search the vehicle without a warrant under the motor vehicle exception.
And why doesn't it? Why is that not probable cause once he gives the vape to the police?
I believe it is.
Okay.
Yes, it certainly would be. So that's where the...
So we agree on that. So then what are you arguing that that once he kept saying no, they should have stopped talking and left?
Yes, because they're asking for consent to search in violation of Fort and Burbach. They are, keep in mind, in Burbach, she grants consent, and then they search the car and find the drugs that she's convicted of possessing, which is reversed. So that is why I focused my memo in the district court that's the line. Once they get that, game over for the
appellant. Does the record indicate, like, how long this argument over consent is going on? I mean, is it going on for 30 minutes? I mean, are they, because in reading your brief, there's an element, which I think you're suggesting, of duress or coercion, which, that's all very fact specific, but obviously the longer the conversation is and the more repeated demands for the search, you know, the stronger your argument is, Mr. Kelly. So
page 41 of the omnibus hearing transcript, how much time passes, and I'm going back to this kind of quickly. He's provided insurance, he's provided valid DL, he's explained what they saw and why he originally said, contrary to the assertion that he lied, he explained the misunderstanding of the question, who did you meet back there? So he explains why they saw what they saw. And then I ask him on page 41, on line 13, how many minutes go by before you offer them THC? Probably, if I had to guess, about 8 minutes probably. Why do you offer them the THC? Because
they just... No, that doesn't sound like a lot to me.
They just keep asking questions and grilling me. It's like I just got frustrated, overwhelmed. So... it's not a long time in terms of the case law to say, to run a check, you've got to go back. It depends how many officers are there. You got to make sure they're valid. Got to make sure there's no warrants.
But these total 8 minutes are not solely devoted to, can we look in your car? Can we look in your car? Can we look in your car? It's a conversation involving many things, including your client's explanation for the events the officers allegedly saw.
I took his answer to... I've got to go back in the record to see if he's not, I don't think he's talking stem to stern. I think that he's talking about how long they harassed him. And keep in mind that in Burbach, right, they've had her blow zeros. They say, can we search? She says, yes. I mean, that's like a
a second or two after the justification for the stop ends. And that's what I think the U.S. Supreme Court has talked about on numerous cases, is that, you know, yeah, you get a reasonable amount of time, you know, Rodriguez and the dog sniff issues, like, you get some time to process the traffic stop. But once the reason for the stop is dispelled or addressed, the seizure has to end. They don't get to add on to what is a normal time for a routine traffic stop, which I think under some case law could take up to 15 minutes if it's a single officer and he needs to check for registration and other issues about issuing the ticket to the right person. And it's one of the more unique things about this case versus others. It isn't for going 55 and a 35 like Burbach, or because somebody forgot to signal a turn. This traffic stop is simply because they believe what they saw was indicative of some kind of drug activity. And that is all dispelled within a moment. I see my time is up. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Kelly. We will carefully consider the issues and issue our decision within 90 days. Ms. Beerworth, please give my warmest regards to Ms. Townsend of your office.